welcome to another episode of the ISCN podcast, the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. My name is Lea Hemmetsberger, and my guest today is Hubert Beroche, founder and CEO of Urban AI. Urban AI is a think tank specializing in all things artificial intelligence in and around cities. In this podcast episode, we'll discuss with Hubert Beroche what role AI currently plays in cities, what use cases are emerging, and what challenges still need to be addressed. And we'll find out what Smombies are and how they relate to the screenless city movement. Hello, Hubert. Very warm welcome to the International Smart Cities podcast. Very happy to have you here.
Hi, Lea. Thanks for the invitation.
First of all, I would like to start by introducing you to our listeners. Can you tell us who you are and what you do? Please tell us something about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Uber. I'm the founder of and president of Urban AI. I think I will share more info later in the podcast, but it's an organization dedicated to urban artificial intelligence. I'm also a lecturer at Sorbonne Université, also actually on Urban AI topics. And I'm actually the author of a book, my first book, that might be published in the very few weeks when this podcast will be released. So yeah, that's who I am.
Nice. Congratulations on the book. Let me guess, it is on the topic of artificial intelligence?
It is in a very related topic indeed. It's dedicated to screenless cities, but I think we will also discuss it later. Yeah.
Indeed, this is something that we should dive into a little bit more later in the stage. You also are the founder of Urban AI, which is a think tank relating to all things artificial intelligence in the urban context. What do you do exactly at Urban AI?
Yeah, so Urban AI is a global organization dedicated to the emerging field of urban artificial intelligence. So it's an organization because we have three entities. The first one, historically, indeed, it's a think tank I founded 5 years ago. And the goal of this think tank is really to do research and experiments in this field of Urban AI. And why Urban AI was historically first a think tank, because 4 years ago, when I founded Urban AI, my initial goal was really to create new knowledge at the intersection of AI and cities. Also because I deeply believe that we need new knowledge at this intersection. So the initial goal was really in a very open way. So that's why if you go to Urban AI website or social media or YouTube, you can see really a lot of contents on urban artificial intelligence with worldwide experts, because that was really, and this is still our initial goal, to create knowledge, expertise, data in Urban AI to help urban organizations from all around the world to better understand this domain, this area, and benefit from it. So that's our, first goal. We're also federating a community of today 200 worldwide experts. So community from all around the world with different expertise coming from university, enterprise, public servants, entrepreneurs, and we are doing with all this community, just research, just experiments. So there is something very bottom-up, very collaborative in the DNA of Urban AI. And lastly, we launched actually this year a consulting branch following the high rise, the high demand of a consulting and expertise in Urban AI from urban organizations. And with this consulting branch, in collaboration with a think tank, and the community, we're also collaborating with urban organizations, municipalities, local governments, real estate developers, all kinds of stakeholders, urban stakeholders, to assist them in their AI, urban AI strategy and policy. So this is a bit more comprehensive view of who we are, what we are doing at Urban AI.
Nice. Thanks so much. Since when actually is Urban AI, well, when was it born, basically?
Yeah, I founded Urban AI 4 years ago, and it was following actually a Smart City World Tour. Some months of following the Smart City World Tour, I also did some months of research at La Sorbonne, and then I founded Urban AI. So I created it in 2020, at the end of 2020.
Interesting, yeah. And basically, you already mentioned it, the Smart City World Tour that you did. We also talked a little bit about it when we prepared for this podcast, and I was quite interested because, you know, you did go on a private personal Smart City World Tour. Tell us, like, where did you go and sort of also what was your motivation to take on this tour?
Yeah, in 2019, when I was still a student, I was, and I'm still actually very fascinated by AI and cities, really this intersection of this technology and the urban environment. The thing is that 5 years ago on the web, you had literally nothing, not any content available to explore, understand this very niche topic. So I decided basically to do a world tour, to go on the ground and to explore by myself what's happening at this intersection of AI and cities. And so I first approached some industrials, some academics, to propose them to sponsor this learning expedition. Fortunately, organizations accepted to sponsor this project and to help me, to support me to do it. And so I did a 6 months Smart City World Tour, during which I explored 12 cities. Cities like New York, Boston, San Francisco, Tokyo, Seoul, Singapore, Copenhagen, Dubai, Amsterdam, London, and Paris. And I met more than 130 stakeholders of what I called then urban AI. So very different stakeholders from public organizations, local governments, big tech companies, startups, academics. And so this is really during the Smart City World Tour that I really understood, I would say, the benefits of AI for cities and for complex environments such as urban environments. That I was able to see really by meeting people the huge benefits, potential of this technology to create more sustainable cities. So that was really my first, I would say, vision in a sense of this concept and this technology. But I also saw the risks of this technology, which I didn't really know, I have to admit, at that time, you know, risk obviously of biases, but also of inequalities. And I saw during my exploration a growing opposition towards smart cities projects, you know, in Toronto, in Los Angeles, in Songdo, in Masdar. So I had this kind of two observations that are not in contradiction, but that are saying something between the need of creating a bridge between AI, urban AI potential, power, benefits for cities, citizens, and the reality of its implementation.
Super interesting. And I'm pretty impressed. I think I would also love to go on a on-the-ground Smart City World Tour. And you also mentioned it already, like the benefits that go with artificial intelligence use, but also some negative or some perceived negative, well, also challenges. Before we dive a bit more into these aspects around really AI on the ground, I just want to close this topic of the Smart City World Tour by just asking you, like, what encounter or what city, country impressed you the most in this regard, and also why?
That's a very complicated question, actually, because I have to admit that I was lucky enough to meet amazing and fascinating people during my entire expedition. So really, each step, each meeting was bringing something new, but also based on previous ones. So it was something very organic. And I'm saying also organic because I met a lot of people that I wasn't expecting to meet, because, you know, when you're meeting someone, then he or she is telling you, oh, but you should meet this one, you should meet this guy in Montreal or in Singapore. So at the end, you're having a kind of new or different, I would say, expedition from what you were expecting. And it's for the best, because like through this, I would say, arborescence, I had the opportunity really to meet also amazing, fascinating researchers like Joshua Bengio, like Yuta Kamatsuo, like so very different people. But yeah, no, I would say that it was really as a whole that I appreciated this experience.
Nice. That sounds really great. Let's dive a little bit into also, I guess, what you learn from there, but also from the research side of things. Artificial intelligence has seen such a hype in media, especially since ChatGPT was launched. Also within the urban context, it comes up more and more. I think you mentioned it also on the World Tour stops that you did. I think Amsterdam was one of the first cities in Europe to really look into the topic more. But before we dive into all these details, I want to ask you my most favorite question around artificial intelligence. How do you define artificial intelligence?
That's a very good question. And I think we are not actually asking it enough during all kind of projects or maybe even interactions, because I have to say that one of the main issues we are encountering today is that we very often means different thing by artificial intelligence. You know, we are using all the same words, but sometimes referring to different definition. And just sharing one example is that, for example, sometimes we have debates, and maybe we will discuss it on carbon footprints of artificial intelligence or on how it works more basically. And you can see in the same room people, experts that are disagree sometimes. And you can also disagree because, for example, if I'm saying AI is cost efficient and is not asking that much energy, you could tell me exactly the opposite, but maybe we are not basically referring to the same AI. You know, maybe I'm referring to very simple model, predictive model, using machine learning, and you will refer to generative AI, generating images based on a prompt. So you see here, we have the same word to use to define two different technologies that are actually quite different. So this is, I think we really have to indeed well define this technology and this world if we want to well use it and have clear strategy and policy on the artificial intelligence. Now, maybe to answer your question, there is obviously a technological definition of artificial intelligence, and I like to use two components. The first one is that it's about learning algorithm. You know, either it's LLM or machine learning or deep learning. Really, one of the main features of modern artificial intelligence is that we are not saying to those algorithms what to do exactly, but we give them the possibility to learn by themselves, in a sense. And the second one is a kind of systemic definition also. This is something that is, I think, quite important when we are talking about artificial intelligence, to keep in mind that actually, it's not only technical or technological. It's not only an algorithm out of the world, but it's inserted in a complicated, intricated network of stakeholders, infrastructures, organizations. And this is very well explained by Kate Crawford in her book, The Atlas of AI. And it's important to keep this definition in mind, because like this, we can better understand that when we are talking about AI, we are talking about a very material reality that has political, ecological, economic implication. And so artificial intelligence, it's also an industry. It's also some organization that have interest sometime to market this technology, to create fear saying that AI can destroy the world. So I would really keep in mind both this technological, but also this systemic definition of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and they basically go hand in hand with each other, I would say.
They go
putting each other into context.
yeah, definitely. Like this learning algorithms, they are not only working by themselves. They are working with labor-intensive system, with data scientists, with data workers, with very different people, more or less actually visible. And indeed, there is like, they are very intricated and complementary. Yeah,
it's very interesting, especially when we also drill a little bit down into sort of the urban context. How do you see AI applying to this urban framework? Can you give us an example so that we can imagine it a little bit better of how sort of AI can be used or, you know, used to support public administrations?
Yeah, so what is very interesting about with urban artificial intelligence is that you really have plenty of possibilities on how using it. And I could even say that the more possibilities you have, the better it is on this topic of urban AI, because it means that at the end, you're creating more freedom and giving the possibility to local organizations to better use this technology. But maybe to give some concrete examples, artificial intelligence can be used for infrastructure optimization. So for example, only by using machine learning, can be on different kind of data set, can be on satellite images, can be on drone, it can be on drone images, or it can just be sometime on data sheets. You can use artificial intelligence to help urban organizations do predictive maintenance. And at the end, basically, be sure that you have less damages in a sense in your city, that it's more safe, that you are more also cost effective as an organization. So this is a very well established today case study, the use of AI for example, infrastructure maintenance. You can also use it to create, I would say, more sustainable cities that are able to better adapt to climate change effects. We are actually doing a research on this topic with Cornell, the University of Cornell, Cornell Tech. It's called Intelligence for Climate Adaptation, and it's a scan that is mapping all the use cases at the intersection of urban AI and climate adaptation. And you can see here that this technology is very interesting, very powerful to better alert when you have natural disaster or to help organization better communicate with their population, because we know it's here in this communication that you really have a crucial effect, a crucial need of information during those events. And you can actually even use this technology for citizen engagement, you know, to be closer to your population, to your citizens by sometime better listening on social media or by better involving them during deliberation, citizen participation sessions, by generating images as a Urbanist AI, a startup from our network, part of Urban AI Network based in Helsinki, is doing. So you can see actually that you have a range of possibilities that is almost infinite when we are talking about urban artificial intelligence.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting also to hear all these different ways of how to, you know, what AI can mean, first of all, within the urban context, and how it can be applied, and also sort of what the best practices are and what research currently shows. Because also when talking about AI, I feel especially in the European context, it might not so much be a big thing in other continents or sectors. We always very quickly come into sort of a debate around also the negative sides of artificial intelligence, especially in the public sector context. And I think it's good to have these debates, especially also around the ethical usage of AI. Can you also explain, because it has been a pretty big focus also in the research of urban AI, I've seen. Can you explain why this is so important, the ethical side of AI, to really shed light on this?
So indeed, that's definitely a very good point, especially in the context of European Union. And it's indeed, we have to stress, as you did, Leah, the importance of having those ethical consideration. And I would add, especially for urban AI systems, for a lot of different reasons, urban AI are really, I would say, different kind of artificial intelligence. This is what we are standing for at urban AI, saying we need different expertise when we are talking but those kind of systems. And those kinds of systems need a very specific attention and ethical considerations. I will maybe share one example that better show the criticality of those technologies. If you are using AI on social media, and this is one of the early use cases and most established and profitable AI use case in the world, is the use on to target user and target ads on social media. Mm-hmm. If your technology is getting wrong, you're getting issue with how it has been established, it's not that much an issue. Like, the worst thing that can happen is that you are not well targeted. Maybe on Netflix or on your social media, you will have as a recommendation the wrong movie or the wrong item. So it's fine at the end. But in the real world, let's say you have an autonomous vehicle or an augmented vehicle or an autonomous drone or some autonomous infrastructures that are using AI, and you're having a mistake. Very concretely, what does a mistake mean? It means, for example, facial recognition or computer vision software that will not recognize, as it used to happen, black people, only white people. So when it's happening in the street, it can create accidents. You know, it can kill people. So you see, in a sense, that because of the materiality of cities and urban AI, and because you are applying the system, I would say, to real world, to the street, to the materiality of public space, just for this, you have a criticality that is completely different from what is happening on other environments where AI were usually deployed, mainly in closed or digital environments, you know, like in a factory or in a social media. So, and this is what is showing the EU AI Act, which is basically giving a high level of criticality to AI that are deployed in cities or in real world. So maybe this, yeah.
Yeah, no, please continue. I didn't want to interrupt you, but one thing that I also heard just now from you is the European AI Act. And I'm wondering, like, do you consider the AI Act a little bit sort of as the GDPR for artificial intelligence? Like, can the European Union play a similar role here also on the world stage?
There is definitely a will with this regulation, with this law, to make effective some, I would say, ethical consideration to transform them into regulation at the continental level, at the European level, to have more rights and also, in a sense, more strength in implementing this regulation. So I believe indeed that this regulation can be really an opportunity to create AI, not only urban AI, but AI more broadly, that are more transparent, that are more ethical, that are more inclusive, without solely relying on goodwill from organizations, private organizations, or even some public organizations. So it can be seen, I believe, really as a kind of collective progress, this AI Act.
Nice. Actually, also when researching this episode and this interview with you, I also found a report from UN Habitat from 2022, and it criticized that there is a lack of oversight for AI applied in the urban context. And I think this also touches a little bit about this, what you just mentioned, transparency, ethical usage. But who checks if this is really sort of being looked into and being sort of applied? Like, do you agree that this is a problem, still a problem 2 years after the report was launched?
What we're seeing definitely is a need of capacity building for urban AI. And it's a very complex system of technologies, urban artificial intelligence, that need to be always at the forefront, both on technical, technological, legal, very different domains of expertise. And so indeed, what is needed, and this is still the case, is more capacity building to give capacities, agencies, expertise to local governments, public organizations, but also more broadly, all urban organizations. Because at the end, what is key, you know, in terms of urban AI implementation is also really about leadership. So it's also about some individuals that will have knowledge, that will have expertise, that will have vision. And especially in urban AI, when you're seeing it, for example, when you're, I will give you one example. We did a few years ago, we created an urban AI guide, which is also available on our website. And the goal of this guide 2 years ago was really to create a kind of first holistic, comprehensive, and also easy definition of urban artificial intelligence, and in a very operational way. So this is why on this guide, what you can see is a kind of anatomy. So we are describing all the layers of urban AI, joining what I shared earlier in the urban AI definition. We are considering urban AI as a system with different layers, from sensor network of sensors to data centers to data analytics, etc., etc. So here we are like this, having this very pragmatic, very operational anatomy with different layers. When you have this in mind, when you have this anatomy in mind, when you are talking about urban AI, you're having a very different perspective and vision than someone that will believe that urban AI is only what is happening on his screen. You know, it's only the data visualization of a city operation center screen or his computer screen, because this is often what we have in mind when we are talking about AI or urban AI. It's the final result. So maybe the graph that you will see on your computer or on operation city operation center screen. So we are saying, okay, that's one layer of urban AI, but you have a lot of different layers that are invisible. And when you are aware of it, you are able to take better consideration in terms of data sovereignty, in terms of AI, of ethical consideration, in terms also of scale economy. You're also being able to make better choices. So really just here with this very small example of having a better vision, understanding of what is urban AI in all those layers, you can see that you can make very different critical choices for your entire organization.
Interesting, yeah. Also, one topic that you sort of touched upon as well is in order for you know, in order to have good AI, like in order to, you know, no bias, ideally, or little bias, as little bias as possible, you also need a good, not just a good data governance or a governance structure for AI in the public sector, but also good data. Would you agree? And how do we get there?
Yeah, no, that's completely true. You know, this is often say garbage in, garbage out. Yeah. And this is especially true. And this is especially true nowadays. First, it's interesting to see that you have more and more research that are stressing the importance of having good data to have better models. So, you know, you have a lot, kind of technical, technological debates on how to improve, how to create better artificial intelligence. And we've been focusing a lot on the models themselves, but you also have researchers, very famous researchers, scholars that are working on small data or that are saying, actually, instead of focusing on the model, maybe we should focus on the data, because by having better data, we will have much better models that will need less energy, that will need less storage. So it's interesting to see that by doing this work on your data, you're also, in a sense, improving the overall efficiency of your model, and so create cost-effective model, and so create more ecologic-friendly artificial intelligence. So this is why you have a kind of first ethical consideration. The other one, obviously, it's related to what you shared, so the biases. And one of the best way of removing biases from a model and a final output is in your data training. So being sure to have balanced, diverse data sets. And this is especially true, you know, with generative AI, where you have risk of hallucination. And here again, what we observed is that one of the best way of not hallucinating is to have a very good data set to be sure that your AI will target the right information, because what you are entering as a data set is clean, balanced, diverse, et cetera, et cetera. So both in terms of technical efficiency, in terms of cost effectiveness, and in terms of ethical consideration, if you don't want to have, as it happened in Los Angeles, you know, like a predictive police algorithm that predicted that crimes will always happen in Afro-American neighborhood, because this is where historically some crimes happen. And so by doing this, this algorithm that was used to create better, more safety, at the end created civic opposition, civic resistance. Like in Los Angeles, you had populations, people that rent in the streets to manifest against this algorithm that was systematizing some social inequalities, because those biases were embedded in this algorithm. So you see, I would say, especially again in the context of urban AI and in the nexus of city, the importance of having those good data. It's not only about having good models, it's also really about having inclusive, fair, sustainable cities and keeping trust, you know, because this is really in cities what matters most. So the trust you have between people, the trust you have with your organization and with your local government. The only fiduciary that is creating boundary is between people and local government is trust, is the fact that some people trust their local government. And your AI, if you're having mistakes, just sometime displaying a false information with your chatbot, or when it's more critical, as it was the case with Los Angeles targeting wrong communities with your police, you are attacking this trust. You know, you are really, as a whole, as a public organization and as a city, creating less trust. And this is definitely what you don't want to do when you are implementing urban AI.
Yeah. In general, when we think about AI also in the public sector, usually we think of the big cities. Also a bit like the cities that you toured on the Smart City World Tour that you did, Tokyo, Singapore, Beijing, Amsterdam, the capitals of sort of the world, basically. But how can we ensure also that the majority of cities that are, you know, small towns, smaller cities, mid-sized cities, but also rural areas can also leverage these benefits of AI and are not left behind in this discussion?
Yeah, so that's indeed an important question, especially important because some smaller cities will feel that they don't, that AI is not for them, because they would need too much capacities, resources. And so sometimes by themselves, they will, I would say, marginalize themselves in terms of technological advancements. And here again, I would like just to stress the importance of leadership. We are collaborating with a city in France called the City of Noisy-le-Grand. That is, at the global scale, a small city, but through leadership, like specific individuals that are really motivated, that have knowledge, they manage to become one of the city in France, the most advanced, one of the most advanced city in France in terms of urban AI. You know, they're using AI for energy optimization, for waste management, and in a very connected way with other ecosystems. Actually, this is also, I would say, our mission to help, support, and assist them in their AI strategy and policy. So here again, I would say the importance really of leadership. But sometimes you don't have this leadership. So how can we do collectively? And here I would say that the importance of creating networks, as actually you're doing, a network of cities, local, national, regional, and global. And those network of cities, they are very important because they are giving the opportunity to smaller cities to learn from each other. And here again, I will share maybe another example, we are collaborating with the Metropolis of Paris, and for the Metropolis of Paris, we are animating a local network of 132 local governments and municipalities on the topic of urban AI. And so regularly, we are organizing sessions, capacity building sessions, learning sessions for all those municipalities. And thanks to this local network that is supported by a larger organization, namely the Metropolis of Paris, some very small town that maybe wouldn't have the capacity to access those high-level capacity stations, they are able, you know, to be there to learn from each other, from us, from Urban AI, global network of experts. And so at the end, by this kind of solidarity, you are creating a collective progress on this field of urban artificial intelligence.
Nice. That's very promising. There's also, so there was an OECD roundtable earlier this year that you participated in, and that was co-organized by the Connected in Europe program, which is a sister program of the ISCN. And you presented there also the case of the screenless city. And I think this is also the topic of the forthcoming book that you mentioned. What is a screenless city, and what has this to do with AI?
Maybe first, to define screenless cities, I first define them as cities that shift attention from screens to streets. And why this concept, and why in a sense this vision? Because we're seeing, I think it's a kind of global urban phenomenon, and that was especially striking actually during my learning expedition, and when I was in Seoul, when you have 90% of smartphone rate penetration. We're seeing more and more smombie. You know, smombie, this is this word between zombie and smartphone to designate people that are so glued, in a sense, by their smartphone that they are no longer looking around themselves. And this phenomenon is so prevalent, so powerful, that some municipalities are creating infrastructures, you know, to protect their smombie, you know, like, for example, lighting infrastructure on the ground to allow people to look at them phone and in the same time at the road, in a sense, because some cities had too many accidents involving smombie. So there is, you know, first.
That's incredible. I mean, sorry to interrupt you, Hubert, but I never heard this term before, to be honest, the smombie, the smartphone zombie. But I have to admit, I've been a smombie from time to time. So I'm glad that some municipalities are, you know, trying to protect me and all the other smombies.
But I think you're not the only one, actually. We are all more or less smombie. And what I wanted to show in this book, indeed, that will be published, is that smombie is not an individual phenomenon. It's really a collective and systemic phenomenon using, like, based on attention economy, based on some stakeholders that have an interest in keeping us glued to our smartphone. So the question we're asking at Urban AI when we're working on screenless cities is, how do we create other urban environments when you have less smombie, where basically you are using other interfaces to embody, to physicalize artificial intelligence? And so that's the connection maybe with Urban AI, is that today most of artificial intelligence are interfaced through screens, your smartphone, your computer, or screens from city operation center. This, with the fact that those AI are more and more effective at keeping our attention, is rising the number of smombie on the streets. So the question is, can we create other interfaces? Can we embody in other way the information? And it's interesting to observe that actually we have under our eyes one of the most powerful, resilient, successful interfaces of all time, which is city. City is really one of the best interfaces and actually even technologies we invented since the dawn of humanity. You know, it's older than books, obviously older than screens, more resilient, collective. And it's an amazing way of connecting to each other, with our past and obviously with our future. So the question I'm asking OECD, but it's part of older reflection, is could we use again cities as interfaces with artificial intelligence and more broadly with information? So that's indeed the topic of the book I was referring to. That's also really a project we are deeply investigating with Urban AI. So we organized the first Screenless City conference a few weeks ago at La Sorbonne, during which we showcased innovation that are embedding AI in the streets, in public spaces. And in the coming months, this is really a topic we will investigate with our global ecosystem of partners, experts, and community.
Interesting. So thanks so much for this introduction to the Screenless City. And I encourage just everyone who's listening also to research that a little bit. And I'm definitely going to sort of look into your book that is coming forward. We're coming a little bit to the end of our time, actually, unfortunately. I think I could, talk ages with you on this topic. And there are so many, rabbit holes that we could actually dive into. But to close this off, I would like to ask you one very simple question. Artificial intelligence, is it a hype? Are we at the top of the hype cycle? Or is it here to stay? What do you think? I think I know the answer.
So it's here to stay, definitely. And the question I think also is, but how do we want this hype to stay?
And yes.
This is really the crucial question, because we are also at a crucial timing where we can see different technological developments. And those technological developments, they are also societal and political developments. And that's also the question, in a sense, we are asking when we are doing research on screenless cities. That's really one of the questions, saying, okay, how can we create alternatives to how AI is conceived, imagined, told, and how it is developed? So I would say that one of the most important points and strategic point is, how do we create alternatives to some very few narratives we have today? If you want to, we might not have time maybe to explore all of them, but you can try to imagine, okay, how do I want to use AI? And you will see that very often when it's about cities, you have two narratives. One, it's about efficiency, cost effectiveness. So what has been called for a long time smart city, and is still called a smart city. And another narrative is for security, saying, okay, we'll create social harmony, we'll create political order, and this is more safe city. This is an idea we've been exploring in a report at Urban AI called Geopolitics of Smart Cities, where we explored those narratives. And we could say, okay, we have those two narratives, but couldn't we create other narratives that are more close to people, to communities, to their real needs? And again, maybe just to create a connection with screenless cities, I have to admit that I first had this the idea of this concept when I saw news, French news from media that shared that a very small French town of 2,000 inhabitants decided to forbid smartphones in public spaces. So it's interesting, because actually it's legally not possible to forbid smartphones in public spaces, but those 2,000 people collectively, at the moment of their collective life, they say, we no longer want those screens in our public spaces because they are damaging the future of our people. They are damaging the cognitive health of our children. Mm-hmm. They are damaging our social connections. So desperately, they went at the limit of what is politically possible because they didn't have alternatives. And so they said, we no longer want those screens. We are forbidding smartphones in public space. And obviously, it's maybe not the right thing to do, in a sense, to forbid this technology. Maybe it's too restrictive, and we could say a lot of things. But what is also saying this non-political decision is the need to create alternatives new way of imagining creating AI to make it fit with different way of living. And maybe some people will say, I want to be a smoothie. I love it. And I want to have, you know, virtual reality on the glasses and all the day be like this in a hybrid world. And they might be able to find their city to do this. But maybe other cities will say, we don't want any screens. We want, but it doesn't mean that we don't want AI. We are just saying we don't want screens, but AI, algorithms, computer are other technologies. So if we are nourishing those alternatives, at the end, what we do is creating more freedom collectively and also individually.
That sounds like the perfect sentence to end this episode. Thank you so much, Hubert Veroche from Urban AI for joining this session. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Leah, for the invitation. It was a true pleasure.
My main takeaway from today's conversation with Hubert is that there is not one definition of AI, but two different ones. A technical definition and a systemic one. And they both go hand in hand to make AI more understandable. And also, I'm more than curious to see if the screenless city approach will lead us to a new narrative that smart cities and AI bring urban communities and people closer together.